Hey y'all, I'm your host Gabrielle.
And I'm Alan.
Welcome to The Eerie Touch, where every week we dive into all things murder, mystery, and paranormal. We've all dealt with a breakup at some point, whether it be romantic relationships or friendships that come to an end. As rough as it may be, rejection is just a part of life. When I was younger, I can remember my mom telling me that you could be the juiciest peach in the world and there would still be someone who wanted an apple. Now, did that help my heartache throughout the years? No. But as I've grown older, it helped me understand rejection better than I did when I was a freshman in high school. And for most of us, we learn to cope and move on. But for some, all it does is make them see red. A tale of a 19-year-old who wasn't just the pretty girl. She was the smart one, too. When she falls into the arms of a handsome 28-year-old attorney, she initially thinks she's found her happily ever after. However, when that relationship starts to disintegrate, so does her mind. She'll do anything and everything to keep him by her side because if she can't have him, then no one can. This is the story of Ryan Poston and Shayna Hubers. Ryan Poston was born on December 30th of 1982 in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, to Lisa Carter and Jay Poston. Ryan was raised in a loving, supportive atmosphere, and when his parents divorced, that was something that didn't seem to change. At a young age, his mother remarried to Peter Carter, and if anything, Ryan gained a second dad. Peter always looked at Ryan as his own son. Now, he lived primarily with his mother and Peter, but he saw and spoke to his biological father, Jay, as much as possible and as much as he wanted. Jay just lived right down the road from them, and their families kind of merged. They shared holidays, birthdays, and everything together. Lisa, Peter, and Jay had a good relationship, which blossomed a good co-parenting relationship. Later on in life, Ryan even had his name changed to Ryan Carter Poston as a tribute to his stepdad. Ryan had always had a kind heart, and it would eventually lead into his career choice. He had three younger sisters, Allison, Catherine, and Elizabeth Carter, who he just adored. He was a loving and protective older brother who was always there for them and wanted to be there for them. The family was close-knit for sure. I mean, his younger sisters looked at his biological dad as Uncle Jay.
So they were close.
Mm-hmm. So it should come as no surprise when Lisa decides to move the family across seas that Jay was heartbroken.
Oh, I'd say. I'd miss my kids too. I mean, I miss Haley and she's just a couple hours away. I couldn't imagine completely out of the country.
For real. Though as heartbroken as he was, he also knew that this would be a good opportunity and experience for Ryan. With that being said, the family moved to travel across the world. Ryan attended International School Manila, which is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian school in the Philippines. For his high school years, he attended the International School of Geneva in Switzerland, before coming back to the U.S. to later attend the Indiana University, where he triple majored in history, geography, and political science.
Wow, that's a pretty striking background.
It really is. His family was wealthy, so to an extent, Ryan had the stepping stones to success from the beginning. Aside from all of that, Ryan was just very intelligent and bright. His heart never changed. He wanted to help others from the beginning, and Ryan just knew that that was his purpose, so he set out on his goal to become an attorney for those with limited resources. Ryan earned his law degree at the Salmon P. Chase College of Law at Northern Kentucky University in Highland Heights, where he laid his roots. Afterwards is when he began his career in Cincinnati, Ohio.
So did he live in Ohio then?
No, he lived in a condo in Highland Heights, but worked in Cincinnati. It's only about, I think, like a 10-minute or so drive between the two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so now it's the year 2011. Ryan is 28 years old. Single and ready to mingle. You know, he's young, has a promising career, good family, but, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have a girl in his arm and in his heart. Now, it's not like he was necessarily looking for a girlfriend, more or less, just if it happens, it happens. So, in 2011, Ryan meets a friend through his cousin Carissa on Facebook. He had come across some provoking photos of this pretty girl that really caught his eye. That girl's name is Shayna Hubers. She was born on April 8th of 1991 in Lexington, Kentucky to Sharon and Robert Hubers. Shayna was the couple's only child and their life was spent being devoted parents, spoiling her however they could, whether it was material things or just with their love and attention. Sharon and Robert were proud of the young woman they raised, including her accomplishments. She graduated cum laude at the University of Kentucky in Lexington with a bachelor's degree in psychology. Shayna had always been driven, wanting to succeed at everything and anything she did, even from a young age. Her childhood friend, Sarah Robinson, was interviewed by CBS News, and after asking how smart Shayna was, she replied with "very." Here, Alan, I'm going to have you read her statement.
Sarah said, and I quote, "I thought she was close to genius, in my opinion. I mean, she was always in AP classes, always getting straight A's in everything. Shayna liked to succeed in everything she did, including music and drama."
Sarah goes on to explain that Shayna was a pretty good actress. Well, at least Shayna thought she was a pretty good actress. And the drama seemed to have overflowed into her personal life. She was very dramatic when it came to boys. She was kind of boy crazy a little.
Which I'm guessing most girls that age are.
Yes, but Shayna was a bit more emotionally wrecked than other girls. According to Sarah, if a guy like broke up with her or something, or if a guy just said they weren't interested in her, Shayna would take it pretty hard, crying, screaming, just cutting a fit. She never could handle rejection well, and she never could just let things go. In the end, that will be her downfall. She's 19 years old when she first meets Ryan. She's a beautiful girl who, at the time, was pursuing a master's degree in school counseling at the University of Kentucky. So they were a bit away from each other. I think Lexington's about an hour and a half from Highland Heights. However, that doesn't stop the pair from getting together. Within a couple of weeks, the two start dating, and Shayna is love-struck immediately. Ryan was charismatic, sweet, handsome, and portrayed the perfect package for Shayna. And in return, Shayna was this beautiful, smart, and provocative woman that was sure to turn heads. With that said, it seemed like the two were perfectly matched, but as in all relationships, as time goes on, true colors start to bleed through. Shayna was driven all right. In relationships, she was driven by jealousy. She didn't want Ryan to have friendships with girls at all, and when he did, it was an argument. Ryan had tried to introduce Shayna to one of his friends, Allie Wagner, who had been good friends with Ryan since college, but Shayna wasn't having it. She was instantly cold towards Allie. It was like she was trying to give this unspoken statement of, you know, like I'm watching you, bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, he's all hers and she better back off.
Mm-hmm. Shayna constantly wanted Ryan's attention to the point that his work had become a reason of argument. Female clients and time taken away that could be spent with her just put more strain on their relationship. There were times that Shayna would even sneak onto his Facebook and block women. She would message women from his Facebook pretending to be him.
Wait, what?
Yes. For example, if she saw that he liked a woman's photo, she would get onto his Facebook to unlock it, and in some instances, she even messaged the women pretending to be Ryan.
But why would she message women from his Facebook if she didn't want him talking to other women?
Oh, silly. She would message them to cut off ties, so the receiver of the message would think it was Ryan.
Okay, so they thought it was Ryan messaging.
Yes. From the moment she met him, she had it all planned out in her mind that he was the one, and she was going to make sure everyone knew it. Ryan, on the other hand, wasn't looking for anything too serious, at least not at that moment. He wasn't really looking for anything to begin with, so when Shayna becomes too much to handle, Ryan calls it off. Shayna is left heartbroken and unable to cope with the dismissal from what she assumed was her happily ever after. She shows up to Ryan's condo unannounced, and as always, she used sex as a weapon, and when that didn't work, she would turn on the waterworks, promising to change. Ryan couldn't stand to sit there and watch her cry, so he makes the decision to try to work things out, and basically, it's all downhill from here.
Nothing changed, I'm assuming, then.
Of course not. They seldomly do. Shayna's jealousy turned obsession real quick. She would make up scenarios in her mind and literally believe them. If Ryan spoke to another woman, she would literally go off the deep end.
If she's this psycho crazy, why didn't he just break up with her for good and just let her go then?
Well, he tried. He would text her and tell her it was over, basically, and she would send millions of texts back. For every one text Ryan would send her, she would send him 100. She technically stalked the poor man. There was one weekend that Ryan told her he was going to turn his phone off and to stop messaging him. And by the time he turns it back on the next day, he had over 75 texts from Shayna.
Good God, that's a lot.
I know, right? Ryan replied back with, and I quote, "I'm not reading a single one of these texts, just stop." And when he wouldn't answer her, Shayna would show up at his condo. She had a key and would welcome herself in and just wouldn't leave. There were many, many times that Ryan would go to his father, Jay's house, just to get away from her. Jay would ask him, you know, like, "Why aren't you staying at your place?" And Ryan would openly tell him, "Shayna just won't leave."
Couldn't he have, like, had the locks changed or call the police by this point?
Well, you know, he was young and he was just too kind. Shayna played on that. She knew what buttons to push. There have been many, many times in my past that I honestly should have called the police, yet instead I always gave them the benefit of the doubt. And too many times, Ryan followed that same pursuit. Eventually, through crying, pushing buttons, and sex, Shayna would entice Ryan to come back to her. They ultimately date on and off for a little over a year and a half, breaking up for what felt like every other week, just repeating history over and over until the end of 2012. Ryan goes over to his father, Jay's house, for dinner and to watch a political debate on October 11th of 2012. While he's over there, he confesses to his father that he just can't keep up with Shayna. It's too stressful, and he's to the point that any love that may have been there before is just gone, and it ain't coming back. Ryan tells his father, "My biggest issue is Shayna is always around. I don't know what to do to get her to leave." Now, he also confides to his father about a woman he had been talking to, Audrey Bolt. She had won Miss Ohio that year. And he really seemed to have liked her. She's gorgeous, sweet, kind, and overall polar opposite of Shayna. You know, Shayna's just, she's crazy and mental, and he needs to get away from her. Ryan really thinks that this may be the new beginning that he's been aching for. He tells his dad that he actually has a date with Audrey the next night, and he was having trouble with trying to figure out how to end it with Shayna without her just flipping out. Jay listens to his son and gives him pretty solid advice, telling him that he needs to be open and honest with Shayna. "Let her down kindly," he says. "Don't be mean, just honest and kind about it."
And sounds like really good advice.
Yes, very good advice. He leaves his father's house with the mindset of doing exactly what his daddy told him to do. He was finally going to set himself free from the hell Shayna had been putting him through for almost 2 years now. Unbeknownst to him, though, this would be the last time Jay would ever hear from his son. It's the evening of October 12th, 2012. An older couple that lived below Ryan's condo had just got home around 8:30 p.m. They hear a woman crying on the deck of Ryan's condo above. She's weeping, and she goes on weeping for about 10 minutes before they hear this woman walk back inside. Around 8:50, they hear these two loud noises that they first assume is fireworks. It isn't until they hear that noise four more times that they realize that it isn't fireworks. It's gunshots. And the woman upstairs is Shayna Hubers. And just from her call to 911, the whole thing starts off pretty bizarre. We're going to go ahead and play the full 911 call for y'all.
911. "Ma'am, I killed my boyfriend in self-defense."
"Okay, where are you at?"
"I'm at 12 Meadow Lane, Highland Heights, Kentucky, 41076.
"Okay, 12 Meadow Lane, are you in a house or an apartment there?"
"It's an apartment, it's apartment suite 10.
"Is it Meadow, anything else, Meadow View or something?
No, 12 Meadow Lane, me and my children.
Okay. Tell me again what unit you're in. It's not showing on my computer. Okay, you're 12 Meadow Lane, unit number 10. Okay, hold on. What did you kill him with?
A gun, a loaded gun in the house.
Tell me where the gun is right now.
The gun is in the house.
Where at, though, ma'am? Tell me where it's at.
I laid it on the bookshelf.
Where at? Lay it on a shelf?
On the bookshelf.
Where are you?
I'm standing about 10 feet from his dead body.
Okay, are you sure that he is dead?
He's dead, ma'am. He's completely dead.
Okay. And how long ago did you shoot him?
I don't know, 15, 10 minutes or something. Not even that long.
Like 10 or 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Dana Michelle Huber.
What is it again? Tell me.
Dana Michelle Huber.
Huber?
Huber, H-U-B-E-R-S, Huber.
Okay, so what's your name again? Shayna or Sana?
Shayna, S-A-N-Y-N-A.
All right, Shayna, I'm just having a hard time hearing you. Okay, all right. You're going to stay on the line with me, okay? Because this is what we're going to do. The officers don't want me to stay on the line with you, so when they get there, they're going to want to know where that gun is, and we want you to get out safely, too. Okay,
are they going to arrest me?
Ma'am, I don't know what they'll do. We're going to send them out. I'm going to stay online with you, okay?
I mean, I'm not a murderer, ma'am. I just killed him.
What happened exactly? What happened?
He beat me and turned me out of the house. He beat me and tried to carry me out of the house, and I came back in to get my things, and he was right in front of me, and he reached down and grabbed the gun, and I grabbed it out of his hand and pulled it.
Okay. All right. Do you need an ambulance? Have you been injured?
I'm not injured, ma'am. I was thrown into the side of the couch.
Okay. And how old is he?
He's 29. He'll be 30. He would have been 30 on December the 30th.
All right. What's his name?
Ryan Carter Poston. He's an attorney in Cincinnati.
Okay. Have you had a history of domestic violence with him?
Yes.
Okay. And is this your gun?
No, this is his gun. He keeps loaded guns in the house.
So he slammed you into the couch, but you don't have any injuries?
I don't have any injuries. I was just very frightened. He's a lot bigger than me. He's 6'3", 200 pounds. I'm 5'8", 120. Mm-hmm. And he picked me up and was carrying me out of the house. And I said, let me get my things at least if we're going to break up. And he wouldn't let me get my things. And when I reached around to try to get my things, I can hear myself echoing in the background, ma'am.
It's just this phone system. This phone system has got a delay.
And he pushed me down from the door all the way to the couch. And when they come here, they'll see how far that is. He threw me across the room. And I was very startled. I was laying on the floor.
Okay.
And I killed him.
Okay. Ma'am, this is what I want you to do, though. You're sure he's not... Ma'am, you're sure he's not breathing at all? No, that's okay. They actually have someone who's outside almost right now, but I'm gonna stay on line with you, okay? What I'm gonna tell you to do is walk to the door with your hands up because we want you to come out safely, okay? So that's why I'm staying on the line with you. Ma'am, I'm just a dispatcher. I'm nothing but a dispatcher, so I can't tell you. My job is to keep you on line, make sure my officers get there safely and nothing happened to them, okay?
Ma'am, and then because he was twitching and I knew he was gonna die anyway and he was making funny noises, I shot him a couple more times just to kill him because I knew he would have been.
I'm sorry, you said you shot him a couple more times after that?
Yeah.
How many times did you shoot him total?
I don't know.
Okay, because he was twitching and you knew he was going to die, so you shot him again?
And not to make sure he was dead because he was twitching so bad and I don't want to lay there and twitch.
So you shot him instead of calling 911?
Do what? Yeah, I did because I knew he was going to die anyway.
Okay.
It was pretty bad. He was like, he just was twitching when he was pretty much dead, and I shot him just so he stopped twitching.
Can you see out front of your apartment at all?
I can't see out front. I can see to the back, but not the front.
Okay.
Do I walk? Which way do I? I can hear him. Do I walk out the front door?
Nope. I want you to stay right where you're at.
Stay right where I'm at?
Stay where you're
okay.
at. Don't tell me.
Okay. Well, they tell me when they're... Well, I have to give them a key to let them in. I actually have to walk all the way down there to let them in.
All right. I want... Okay.
Is he out front?
Ma'am, what I want you to do is I want you to set
yeah.
the phone down, but I do not want you to hang it up. I want you to go to your front door. I want you to open it up, walk outside the door with your hands in front of you.
Okay, I will.
And your hands open. The officers are at
okay.
the top of the steps, but set the phone
okay.
down.
Okay, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Okay, I set the phone down.
Set the phone down and put your hands in front of you.
Are you there? Are you there?
I'm here.
I set the phone down. I walk out the front door with my hands and palms down.
I went, yes, with your hands open and you're in straight in front of you. Officers are at
okay.
the top of the steps.
Okay, bye.
Okay, now just from listening to that call, from your police officer perspective, what did you just take from that?
Well, let me start out with saying everyone reacts different to situations.
Right.
Even a high stress situation like that. Everyone's going to act different. You do look for specific things, but not everybody does the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the fact that she's kind of being specific with certain details,
mm-hmm.
She starts talking about his weight and height against hers, and you know, she goes into him picking her up and carrying her outside, and then she could have left then.
Yeah.
But she mm-hmm. had to get back inside. That's if that even occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the asking right off if she will be arrested. Like, that's more important right now than the fact that she's just killed someone.
Yes.
But the most mm-hmm. damning, just the most damning is when she goes on saying he's twitching and gurgling after she shot him. So she shot him a few more times to put him out of his misery.
Like he was an animal.
I mean, just...
Like he was
Who does that? I mean, that's just... Mm-hmm. That's the part that's just, you know, that's just not typical at all.
Yeah, the entire call to me is just... From the moment that call started, I was immediately like, this is weird. This is weird. From her saying, you know, I shot my boyfriend in self-defense. You know, I know people react differently, and I understand that. But... I don't know. I guess, you know, out of all the things that I've listened to on true crime throughout, you know, my life so far, I don't really think that I've ever heard somebody who called freaking out from, you know, and it really be domestic abuse, say, right off the bat, I killed my boyfriend, I killed my husband, self-defense.
To me, it sounded more like she was trying to convince the dispatcher.
Yes, I agree.
You know, mm-hmm. to give the dispatcher a version, and the dispatcher can't do anything, but she doesn't know that.
Yes, mm-hmm. Well, moving on. Police arrive on scene to discover the body of 29-year-old Ryan Poston lying lifeless in the floor beside of his dining room table. A frantic and emotional Shayna freaking out about the entire fiasco, so much so that police are trying to calm her down. She repeats to police what she told the 911 dispatcher, that Ryan was an abusive boyfriend, they had gotten into a fight, he was throwing her around, and when he started to move towards the gun, she grabbed it and began shooting. Now, at first, police are empathetic.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, you've got a young woman in front of you who's shaking, crying, very distraught.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to want to calm them down, you know, especially if, you know, they're probably going into it thinking, you know, this is a domestic abuse, and, you know, you're not going to overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
I am, however, wondering if the crime scene matched, you know, her description about what took yeah. place that night, just because there were so many red flags from the 911 call.
Well, you're not off track. Authorities begin to question what truly happened when they start scoping out Ryan's condo. Usually within a dispute, you know, you're going to have signs of a struggle. Things will be knocked over, you know, scratches on the wall, bruises or scratches on the person, which in this case would be Shayna. You know, there's going to be something to show for it. But in this case, there wasn't.
There wasn't anything?
Nope. Everything was perfectly placed as it normally would be. Well, everything besides the gun, the chair that Ryan had been sitting in, and Ryan himself. You'd think that if she got thrown into the side of the couch, like she said in that call, that like a pillow or something would have been moved, or maybe the couch slid, you know, a little bit, but there was nothing.
There should have been something out of place.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, police are scratching their heads and take Shayna down to the police station for questioning. She's read her Miranda rights, and she right off the bat says she wants an attorney.
Which is not a bad idea.
Yes. I
personally would recommend it to anyone.
Exactly. Now, that alone isn't telling. What is the fact that Shayna just word vomits the entire time. Like, she literally will not shut up.
And that does happen a lot, too.
Does it?
Even after reading their Miranda rights and, you know, telling them, you know, okay, we're not going to ask you any more questions, they continue to talk and talk and talk.
Well, that's exactly what she did. I mean, you had officers walking in and out just because she just kept repeating herself and going off on wild tangents about herself. She even makes a statement claiming her fear of never finding a husband because no one will want to marry her if they find out that she killed a boyfriend in self-defense. And then she starts giggling about it.
What?
Mm-hmm. We're going to play that part of her interrogation for you right now.
I don't know if anyone will ever want to marry me if they know that I killed a boyfriend in self-defense.
Now that is a huge red flag.
Mm-hmm. And investigators are thinking the same thing. Not only does she make that stupid statement, but when she has the room to herself, she can be seen in that video surveillance of the room dancing, singing, laughing, all the while saying, and I quote, "I did it. Yes, I did it. I killed him. I can't believe I did that." Tell me that's not damning.
Like, for real. You know, even if we're not in the room with you, we're still watching you. The moment you walk into the police station, now you're being recorded. You would think, as smart as she supposedly was, that she'd have known that.
Honestly, from what I've gathered researching this case, I'm under the assumption that Shayna is solely book smart. With the evidence, or lack thereof, to back up Shayna's claim and her overwhelming word vomit, she's taken into custody and arrested for the murder of Ryan Poston. Shayna is given a $5 million bond. Now, throughout this whole thing, not only do I feel awful for Ryan's parents, but I also feel so bad for Shayna's mom. Sharon wholeheartedly believes her daughter, and I can't say that I blame her. Well, at least I understand why. Sharon and Shayna were very close, and for the most part, she told her mother everything. And yet, nothing at all. There was this one time, when she was spending the night with Ryan, that she called her mom in the middle of the night to have her drive the hour and a half to just be with her because she was upset over a dispute that she had had with Ryan earlier. Now, that doesn't scream motherly love. I don't know what does. Sharon tells authorities that Shayna had mentioned that her and Ryan got into heated arguments, that they broke up all the time, and said that he was cheating, you know, etc.
So, basically, told her mom that he was toxic.
Exactly. But someone like Shayna isn't going to tell her mother the complete truth. She needs someone on her side, and of course she's going to paint herself in a good light.
Of course.
Needless to say, Sharon was heartbroken that she couldn't make Shayna's bail. Therefore, Shayna was kept in the Campbell County Jail until her trial began on April 13, 2015, 2.5 years after the incident. Prosecutors paint a telling picture for the jury of what they believe happened that night. They say Ryan more than likely followed his dad's advice and broke up with Shayna. They believe that she knew that this time it would be for good. She probably, you know, had already found out about his date with Miss Ohio and she was seeing red. She walked out onto his deck crying, trying to figure out what she was going to do or how she was going to get him to change his mind. And it's then when she decides that if she can't have him, no one can. Ryan had a little collection of guns. Most in the country do. She walks back inside the condo, grabs his own gun and shoots him twice in the head. An expert in bloodstain patterns conclude that Ryan was sitting down when those first two shots were fired. He falls out of that dining room chair and begins twitching, so she shoots him four more times. Not because she just couldn't stand to see him like that, but because she was full of rage and jealousy. She was a woman out for revenge. The defense obviously keeps with this whole battered wife syndrome. They tell the jury that Ryan was a playboy, that he was hot-headed and vain. He pulled at Shayna's strings in an attempt to break her down, just to build her back up the way he wanted. They say he wasn't just physically abusive, but that he was emotionally too. He would call her fat, tell her she was an ugly bitch, etc., just these horrible things. But prosecutors were quick to come back with 100,000 texts. That's right, 100,000 text messages between the two. They tell the jury that most of those messages are from Shayna. Like we said earlier, for every text he sent Shayna, she sent 100. They claim she's a narcissist who couldn't handle rejection, never could. In July of 2011, someone had actually sent Ryan photos of Shayna with a man in Lexington when she had lied and told Ryan that she was going to be in Indianapolis. He once again tried to break it off back then at that point, saying, and I quote, "You need a lot more validation and affection from men than I can give you."
So she wasn't even faithful to begin with.
No, she wasn't. She had sent texts to another friend claiming that she was dating this other guy and that she didn't know what to do. She said to her friend, on one hand, with this other guy, she sees a future. And on the other hand, with Ryan, she sees a man who will never love her as much as she loves him.
See, why didn't she just end it with Ryan? I mean, right then, if she was in love with somebody else.
I think someone like Shayna doesn't know what love is, honestly. Anyways, within these texts, they find a conversation from the day he was murdered between the two where Shayna was trying to gain sympathy from Ryan. She told him that her mother had to take her to the hospital and that doctors were putting her on medicine for hypertension because her chest had started hurting. Her Google search that day showed her Googling what types of medicine you would take for that, and in reality, her mother never took her to the hospital that day. I mean, Shayna was with her mom, but they had went shopping at Dillard's and went to Bob Evans for lunch. All the while, she was Googling heart symptoms. But one of the most damning texts were from Shayna to one of her close friends before a date with Ryan. Here, I'll let you read it.
"When I go to the shooting range with Ryan tonight, I want to turn around and shoot him and kill him and play like it was an accident."
Like, are you dumb? Like, you know that she had to have known that they were going to look at her messages and that they were going to not be good.
Yeah, I don't know what was going through her head. Actually, I don't know what went through her head this entire relationship.
Apparently, no one does. What they do know is that she isn't this battered woman she so effortlessly claims to be. A jury ultimately find her guilty and sentence her to 40 years with no parole for at least 34 of those years. There's this picture online, which we'll have on our website, of Shayna looking back at her parents in the courtroom after her verdict was read. And she's crying and looks so surprised that no one believed her. Like, you just have to see this picture, people.
And I'm sure she probably was surprised.
Mm-hmm. Oh, me too.
I mean, it's almost like she couldn't believe it. Like, she honestly thought she would get away with this murder, which I feel is a common mistake for a lot of murderers. Everyone always thinks they can get away with it until you're sitting in that courtroom losing your battle, the innocence.
Mm-hmm. But Shayna actually ends up getting a second chance that will bite her in the tail. Her attorney files for a mistrial after discovering that someone on her jury had a felony conviction in the past. Now, I don't understand, like, why is that such a big deal?
That someone on the jury has a felony conviction?
Yes.
Anyone with a felony conviction is not allowed to serve on a jury.
But why?
It's just one of the rights that you lose when you're convicted of a felony.
Oh. The more you know. Well, Shayna soon realizes that she should have just let it go. In her second trial, she has a totally different defense attorney, and he takes a very promiscuous and daring turn on the whole thing. He brings up that Ryan never could make Shayna orgasm.
Wow, that's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Yep. That he would tell her that she wasn't a woman and would just take out all of this frustration on her because of it. The defense this time attempts to put on a show of how their sex life was the root of their problems on his part. And I just can't believe that a distinguished defense attorney decided that this was a good battle to fight. Because to me, that just sounds so ridiculous, you know, not to mention all the evidence that the prosecutor has. And, you know, he already knows what evidence the prosecution has. So I don't understand where his head was at with this.
Just grabbing everything he can to throw at the wall and see if it sticks. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. Just whatever he can to try to influence this jury that this was, you know, this was not a murder on her part, you know, anything like that. That he was actually the evil one here.
So, desperation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the prosecutors once again came back with texts to shut down that theory.
As I was thinking that they would.
She had sent numerous texts to her friends throughout her relationship with Ryan, talking about how sex with him was the best sex she had ever had. She goes on talking about, you know, getting off and all of these wild things that they did in bed. It was just like everything her defense tried to hold up, prosecutors would shut it right back down. Her second trial comes to an end, and that jury comes back with their verdict. Guilty. Life without parole.
Oh, wow. So she probably should have just left it alone.
She most definitely should have. When they read that verdict out loud, the look on her face is so much worse than the picture from her first trial. She is just, I don't know, that second picture just looks like she's completely in shock. But it seems Ryan's family finally got the justice they deserved. However, it can never bring Ryan back. His family will forever have a void in their heart that will never be filled. A son, a brother, and a best friend was taken. A young man who will never be able to get married, have kids, live the life that he so rightfully deserved. Shayna Hubers not only ruined the Postons' life that night, she ruined her mother's too. A woman who will forever have the heartache of knowing she will never see her daughter out from behind bars again. All of this because one woman couldn't have her cake and eat it too. Again, I'm your host, Gabrielle.
And I'm Alan.
We'll talk next week. You can find our reference photos and source materials for each episode on our website, theeerytouch.com. You can listen to this podcast on every platform imaginable. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram for new leads and updates. And we would really love it if you could leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast on. It could really help us out.